Well, good morning, everyone. This is Pearls and Swine on Good News You Can Use. It's Travis and Lisa here with you today. We are missing our partner in crime, and he's gallivanting downstate at a wedding and hanging out with some family. So we will go on without our fearless leader today. But last week, Levi talked about one of these shows that he's gotten into, and I think it's on TLC. It's called Hoarders. And I've never seen that show, but he explained some very crazy stories about it, and I think he's 3 or 4 episodes deep into it. So if you're a fan of the show, he's a guy you can talk to about it. But, you know, in my previous life, I did real estate appraisal, and so I was in and out of a lot of folks' houses, and, you know, you see some things when you go into other people's houses. Lots of folks have different collections of stuff, and some really get after their collections where there's a lot of things that they have invested in over a lifetime.
Yeah, we have a family member who has clowns everywhere. Nice. Like super creepy figurine clowns, and that's
we have
disturbing.
One in my family that has the porcelain face dolls.
Oh, those are even worse than
creepy.
Clowns.
My kids will not sleep in that room.
Yeah, no. Staring at you the whole time. No, no thanks.
But one of the things that he mentioned when he had been walking through and watching that show is that there's kind of a theme that's wrapped up in all of these people that they go into their house and they hang out with them for a week or so and help them declutter and kind of reorganize their homes and their lives. But he said that a lot of these people, all of them, have their identity wrapped up in their stuff. And when the people come in to start cleaning out things, like, it's a really hard process for them to walk through emotionally and physically. Like, they have a lot of fear and anxiety in that.
Yeah.
Which I don't know. I don't have anything that I'm that collectible of, so.
Yeah, I have, we were talking about this a moment ago, I have a lot of books. And so many books. And I think that is one area where my identity is wrapped up in my books. And there are books that I haven't read for years, but I know where passages are on the pages. And I can only imagine if someone were to come into my home and be like, oh, I don't think you need this shelf of books. I'd be like, no, those books are part of me. Don't take them away.
Well, I know what to do next time you're on vacation.
Oh, no.
You know, but if you think about that, we all have things in our lives that we fear losing and things that we wrap up our identity in. And, you know, it's really this idea of we have put our trust or our faith in them at some level. And we're going to look at a passage out of Daniel chapter 3. And if you've been in church for some time or you grew up in there and went to the Sunday school lessons and stuff, you're probably familiar with this story. It's about King Nebuchadnezzar and 3 guys named Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. It's about 605 BC, and Babylon had invaded Israel. And what they did back then is they kind of took captive all of the main high-caliber people, and they would bring them into Babylon, and they'd train them up to help their nations thrive and succeed. And so King Nebuchadnezzar had these guys, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and they were learning the ways of Babylon. And King Nebuchadnezzar was a narcissist, should we say? He thought very, very highly of himself. Mm-hmm. And so we pick up the story in Daniel chapter 3, and the king has made this image of gold of himself that's 60 cubits high, 60 cubits wide, and he set it out in the plain of Dura in Babylon, and he got all of the smart guys, the leaders, the governors, his advisors, everybody that you could think of that had something to do with being an official and had some notoriety. And they dedicated the image, had it set up. And he goes on to make this decree that basically whenever they play music, they talk about if you hear the sound of the horn in verse 5, the horn, the flute, the zither, the lyre, the harp, the pipe, all kinds of music, you're to fall down and worship this gold idol that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And if you don't fall down and worship it, you'll be immediately thrown into a blazing furnace. Which is pretty harsh.
Yeah.
So that just goes kind of to speak into the mindset of Nebuchadnezzar and his vanity. He thought that he was one that really was providing a lot for Babylon at that time. And so Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are kind of faced with some trials here. So if you pick up the story as it continues on, in verse 8, it says, at this time, astrologers came forward and denounced the Jews, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, coming from Israel. They were Jewish guys. They said to King Nebuchadnezzar, may the king live forever. And that just sounds like a setup comment, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, these guys are basically tattletales at this point, and they're buttering up the king before they drop the bomb of what they want. And so, may the king live forever. Your majesty has issued a decree that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, the flute, the zither, the lyre, the harp, the pipe, and all kinds of music must fall down and worship the image of gold, and that whoever does not fall down and worship will be thrown into a blazing furnace. But, there's always a but, there are some Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the providence of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who pay no attention to you, your majesty. They neither serve your gods nor worship the image that you have set up. So these guys are kind of trying to posture themselves up a little bit. I could imagine, like, if they are Babylonian dudes, they're a little bit jealous that these foreigners have been brought in and put in some high places and trained up. And we don't know, I don't know exactly what Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's job was, but they've got some notoriety to them. They're part of that group that Nebuchadnezzar wants to have worship him for all the great stuff that he's done.
Yeah. Oh, and what's interesting, too, about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego is that they're part of that crew with Daniel that were taken from their homeland as children, and they're still choosing. I mean, as the story goes on, they consistently choose to follow God even when things are hard, even when they find themselves in really, really sticky situations. They have a compass that is in the direction of God from the time that they're young, the story is full. This is a story of one choice and what I think is a lifetime of choices that they've made. And I think that's pretty impressive, because I can't imagine what it would be like to be in exile from your homeland, taken as a young person, and then asked to do all of these things in a country that you're not familiar with, and still choosing in the direction of God. I think it's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, that's super impressive. What sticks out to me is, like, one, you've got three guys, and so I'm assuming they're buddies, because yeah. We hear them all referenced together. So, like, they're making good choices about life together. It also makes me think of, like, they're young when they're captured and put into exile, and they're being indoctrinated with all this Babylonian culture and teaching and stuff. And, like, man, they're even able to stand up against that stuff because they've got friends that are there to support them and encourage them and help them in their faith walk. And I think that just speaks to the importance of, hey, be wise of the friends that you choose. And even if you face hard things, you know, you've got people that have your back. Mm-hmm. And are watching out for you. So these guys are tattletaling, and they're trying to kind of posture themselves up. And we see in verse 13 here, King Nebuchadnezzar's reaction. And you can imagine, as a narcissistic dude that has basically all the power, and Babylon was like the superpower of the time, so he's the guy. He's the mm-hmm. top dog. He's not very happy with it. So it says in verse 13, furious with rage, Nebuchadnezzar summoned Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So these men were brought before the king, and Nebuchadnezzar says to them, is it true, you guys, that you do not serve my gods or worship the image of gold that I've set up? When you hear the music of all kinds, if you're ready to fall down to the image that I made, very good. But if you do not worship it, you will be thrown immediately into the blazing furnace. Then what god will be able to rescue you from my hand? So, man, the tables turn pretty quick. Like, there's no margin for error in this thing. Nebuchadnezzar's got a very prominent line drawn in the sand for what he's expecting from everybody. And I think you see the tattletales really push into that. So they had to have been close to him, kind of knowing who he was as a person. And so they bring the charge, so to speak, to the king about how do they say it in VeggieTales? Shadrach and Benny, I think,
yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
That's a good one. So those three guys are brought before the king, and he just goes rage monster on them. Like, he's furious. And what's really kind of prominent here is that it's this moment of integrity. Well, to choose integrity or not for those three guys. And Nebuchadnezzar has what he views as power and control over them in their lives. Of, like, he's you've gotten all this stuff from me because I'm the king of Babylon and Babylon's super successful and wealthy and thriving. And he's like, you can take this stuff that I'm offering you. All you have to do is bow down and worship this idol. Everybody else is doing it. Or you can suffer the consequences, and the consequences that he has for them is I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, the choice sort of amps up, because I think if we think about the idea of hoarding that Pastor Levi began the sermon with, the choice at the very beginning for them is a choice of identity, right? They can hoard their identity as being comfortable in the kingdom, or they can choose to have an identity that's bound up in the living God. And so they make that one choice. And then there's a higher order choice after that. Nebuchadnezzar says, look, I see what you're doing. You're clearly placing yourself in a camp with an identity that is not associated with me. I see where your allegiance is. And so now you're not just going to lose your identity, but you're going to lose your life. And then they choose again in that way. And so it's interesting to me that the choice towards integrity, or the choice to the willingness to give it all for them to be completely allegiant to God is so evident in at least two places in the story. And then I think in the third place when they get out of the furnace.
Well, and what makes this story relatable is that we all face those moments in life where there's an integrity issue, a moral issue, maybe a relational issue, and there's maybe more than one or more than two options on the table. And it's like, what are you going to pick? I don't think any of us are immune from that type of a situation in our lives. And, you know, it could be a job thing where somebody's asking you, if you're in accounting, to fudge some numbers so that the report for the shareholders or whatever looks good. And you read, I mean, I did business school, so we read lots of stuff on Enron and those kinds of corporations and how it all went sour. And like, they always came back to this ethical, moral dilemma. Like, if somebody just stood up for what was the right and the noble decision, yeah, it still might have cost them their job, but things could have played out differently.
Well, yeah. And I think too, and maybe you're getting there, the really powerful moment for me in the story is when they say, but even if God does not deliver us, they are aware of what's at stake. They're aware of the choice that they're making. And they also know that God can deliver them, but they don't know that he will. And they're okay with that. They're going to still make that decision. They're still, even if God doesn't show up in the way that they would like for him to show up, they are still going to place their allegiance with God. And they're willing to let go of all of the things that I think we typically hold on to that we think really, really matter. They're willing to say, even if it doesn't work out, I still choose this.
Because in that moment, that decision that they have to make, they're giving up their positions. Mm-hmm. Even if, let's say they don't get, we're given a little spoiler alert here. Even if they say, we won't go in the fire, and King's like, cool. Like, they're giving up their position. I'm sure there's some ramifications and some fallout from that because of the guy King Nebi is. And their lives are on the line. Like, this is more than just a minor ethical, moral, faith dilemma. It's got life consequences. So if we pick back up in verse 16, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to him, King Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve will be able to deliver us from it. And he will deliver us from your majesty's hand. But even if he does not, here's that part you were talking about, Lisa. But even if he does not, we want you to know, your majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold that you have set up. And that's a super powerful statement. Super powerful. And one thing that is kind of makes me chuckle here is, like, they're still being polite to the king, calling him your majesty and stuff. I don't know if I'm facing getting chucked into a blazing hot furnace that I'm going to be that kind of person. Maybe that speaks to my moral integrity. But it's so powerful here. And they're faced, you know, there's no defense really or option for them at this point. They've crossed King Nebuchadnezzar's line in the sand. And they're saying, man, we're going to trust God and what he says because he can do it.
Well, yeah. And I think something that Levi said on Sunday that was really interesting was, it really puts it into perspective, the difference between their understanding of God's power and Nebuchadnezzar's understanding of his own power. In verse 15, just before we get to the section where they're responding to King Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar says, if you don't worship, you shall immediately be cast into a burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands? And he has such arrogance and such, his ego is so big that he really believes that he is bigger than God and he is God. And they recognize, and this is what I think is really interesting, they recognize that the only power that they have, the only power that we have, is really what God has given to us. And even then, in that small, tiny bit of influence, tiny bit of power that we have, he still is the one who holds all the cards. He still is the one that's in control. And they get that. And that's why they can say, even if he doesn't, we're still with God. And Nebuchadnezzar doesn't get that. And he's, you know, shown to be wrong by the end. But
Yeah, that's a super good point. We talked about there are moments in our lives where we're going to face those kind of dilemmas. And there is maybe no defense for them. Like, you just either have to compromise yourself or you stand up for what's right. And we see these guys make that stand. They put their foot down and they're like, no, like, you think you're God, you think you got it going on.
Yeah.
But we trust God, and they've walked in his faithfulness. You know, they were captured and put into exile, but they weren't killed, which happened a lot of the time back then. Mm-hmm. And they actually lived a pretty good life, which makes it even kind of harder to believe that they were not willing to compromise their standards in this thing in their faith. I think so often we, on a different level, obviously, but we compromise so many things for the pleasures of this world, money, status, mm-hmm. position.
Yeah.
And that is a compromise of character and morals and values and all those things. But these guys trust in God, and it's just super cool that they're like, you know, even we're going to trust in him, even he's going to, or he can deliver us. He's able to do it. But even if he doesn't, we're still with God. Mm-hmm. And that is such a testament to faith, man. I wish that all of us could have a faith like that, just believing that God's going to show up. And you know, if we think about that, we'll face circumstances, and maybe in a circumstance right now that just seems like God's not with you in that, and that you're in that furnace scenario. But you look back on your life, if you've been walking with the Lord for a while, and I guarantee that all of us can think of multiple instances of where God has shown up. And it's probably not in ways that we were praying for or hoping for or even expecting.
Well, yeah. And you think about these three guys, right? Their story is a story where God's faithfulness may have been a little bit obscure. Again, they're exiled far from home in a country that is not their own, doing things, being forced to do things. And still they trust God. Still they count on the faithfulness of God. And maybe their lives are fairly comfortable. And I think that they are. But it's interesting that they, and really beautiful, actually, that their story does not, their story includes twists and turns and surprises that we would, looking in on their story, if it were to happen to me, it would be hard to see God's faithfulness there. But they seem to know the God of their fathers is incredibly faithful. And they are trusting in that God, even though they are in a very strange circumstance, you know, individually and historically.
Yeah. And the passage continues on that the king was even more furious with them, and his attitude towards them changed, which is hard to believe because he was already rage monstering on them. But he ordered the furnace to be heated up 7 times hotter than usual, and he commanded some of the strongest soldiers in his army to tie them up and throw them into the blazing furnace. And these guys were in their robes, their trousers, turbans, their clothes, and they were bound and thrown into the blazing furnace. That's verse 21. Then the king's command was so urgent that the furnace so hot that the flames of the fire killed the soldiers who took them up. And these three men, firmly tied, fell into the blazing furnace. The king leapt to his feet in his amazement and asked his advisors, "Weren't there three men when we tied them up and threw them into the fire?" They replied, "Certainly, your majesty." And he said, "Look, I see four men walking around in the fire, unbound and unharmed, and the fourth one looks like a son of the gods." Nebuchadnezzar then approached the opening of the blazing furnace and shouted, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out. Come here." So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the fire, and all of the royal officials and advisors around them, and they saw that the fire had not harmed their bodies, nor was a hair on their head singed. Their robes were not scorched, and there was no smell of fire on them. And then we see Nebuchadnezzar's kind of mindset, his attitude, his whole demeanor change, and he says, Praise be to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and rescued his servants. They trusted in him and defied the king's command and were willing to give up their lives rather than to serve or worship any god except their own God, big G. Therefore, I decree that all the people of any nation or language who say anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be cut into pieces and their houses turned into piles of rubble, for no other god can save in this way. And then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. And man, what an amazing way for God to show up in those moments. These guys, they had no guarantee in it. It was a trial by fire, a walk by faith, literally and figuratively. But they were faithful, and God was faithful.
Well, yeah, and the story ends not just there. The next chapter is a records King Nebuchadnezzar giving loud national praise to God. He's King Nebuchadnezzar to all people, nations, languages that dwell in all the earth. Peace be multiplied to you. It has seemed good to me to show the signs and wonders that the Most High God has done for me. How great are his signs, how mighty his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom. And King Nebuchadnezzar realizes his lack of control, the power that God has, all because three guys chose to do the right thing and to swear allegiance to the only God. And that's powerful. I mean, Nebuchadnezzar is the king of the world at this time. He's the king of the biggest power in the world. And he in this moment is saying, I get it. I see who God is. All because of these three guys who you wouldn't have expected to, I don't know, were it me, I don't know what choice I would have made.
Yeah, it's hard to put yourself in that position. The cool thing, the fourth person in the fire, incarnate Jesus. Mm-hmm. And that just, you know, in the New Testament, that's the scriptures, the second half of the Bible where Jesus' life is recorded. And he promises us that he will never leave us or forsake us. And even before he was born, even before he was on the earth, he was present. Part of the Holy Trinity. You can study all that theology on your free time, but it's so cool to see. We feel like life throws things at us. The circumstances that we're in sometimes are beyond hope. Maybe we feel like we've been in this blazing furnace of life and you can't find an escape. But I want all of our listeners to be encouraged that, you know, if you accept Jesus, if you're walking as a child of the Lord Most High, it doesn't matter. It's the same Jesus that was in the furnace with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. It's the same Jesus that rose again and conquered death and sin after death on the cross and coming back from the dead on the third day. It's that same power that is at work in your life today. And so I just want to remind you guys that you have hope in Christ always. He can redeem every circumstance. Nothing that we face in this life is for naught. Nothing is wasted. God always has a plan. No situation, no relationship is beyond repair. No furnace of life, so to speak, is too destructive. And what we see out of here, that again, a theme throughout scripture, what was intended for evil turned out for good. We see the king of the ancient world coming to a faith, a vibrant faith in God. And so we might feel that all is lost. It never is, because we have a God who saves. And that is good news you can use. Thanks for hanging out with us this week, you guys. If you enjoyed the topic or want to find out a little bit more about other Pearls and Swine podcasts, you can search out Evangel Houghton on your podcast device, or you can find us at evangelup.org on the web. If you've got any questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. Or if you have any topics of ideas that you'd like for us to cover next time, you can shoot those over to me, Travis at evangelup.org.